Hey there. How are you today? My name's Dana Demara. You have landed on Soul Medicine. I want to just offer up a few administrative items before we begin our deep dive into this podcast. And first of all, I want to say thank you for being here. I'm so grateful. So first, for you yogis out there, always thank you for joining me. Because you are a loyal listener and you're interested in yoga, meditation, breath work, and sound healing, I'm offering you a gift just for listening. I've been at this practice of yoga for over 2 decades now, and in 2020, I created my own portal of full healing modalities. I would love for you to try it out for 2 weeks on me. Yes, on me. Just go to danademarayoga.com. Put in your email address and you receive instant access to live virtual classes and a library of over 300 recorded classes of days gone by. This is my gift for you. Thank you. Those of you interested in astrology, if you go to myastrocast.com, you'll get a mini speed course on astrology. This little course will give you a general overview of astrology. However, if you thirst for more, every week I host a podcast on YouTube all about the weekly astrological outlook. It's free, and if you subscribe on YouTube, the update will come right to you. Just look for me on YouTube. You can't miss it. One more thing I think you may want to know. I do update my website often. I do my best, and I send out newsletters weekly. Sometimes more than once a week. So if that's your jam, go to my website and subscribe to my newsletters. Just go to danademara.com, put in your email address in the little pop-up there, and you'll get emails from me. Now here's the deal about emails. You're going to get emails. If something doesn't resonate, just delete it. But don't unsubscribe. Okay? I do want to say this about my website though. It still is very static info, right? So if you are an Instagram person and you want daily musings, free meditations, early morning practices, find me on Instagram at Dana Demara Evolution. It's also my Facebook handle. However, I don't really post very much there. It's odd to me that we need so many channels. So I would say find one that works for you and I'll meet you there. Of course, for those of you who live here in Encinitas, California, I do host weekly classes in person, sound healing and breathwork sessions right here in SoCal. So I would say just check my website at danademarayoga.com and you'll be able to find all the info you need. Nice little calendar there. Sometimes we practice on the bluff. Sometimes we're practicing at different locations in and around Encinitas and La Costa, but I would love to see you somewhere on this path. Welcome. Welcome, welcome, welcome. You're invited to learn and listen with me. Take a moment to ground in, breathe, and give yourself a moment of stillness. I want to say thank you to Beautiful Chorus for this beautiful intro. It's called The Opening. Thank you, ladies. Thank you, everyone. Have a beautiful day. Namaste.
Hey there. Thank you so much for your request on hosting a podcast on the yamas and the niyamas. I love talking about the yamas and the niyamas, and there's a couple reasons for that. One is I feel like when I talk to people or interview people who want to take the teacher training with me, sometimes one of the first things they say is, "Well, I'm not that good at yoga, and so I don't know, maybe I should do like another year of yoga and then I'll come take the training." And I'm like, oh my God, just get in the training now because there's so many other pieces to this practice that have nothing to do with you perfecting a pose. Just FYI. And the yamas and the niyamas are one of those things. The yamas and the niyamas, I hope I don't go too far off track with this podcast. I talked about the eight limbs in a previous podcast, and the eight limbs are those eight limbs of yoga. It's the eight pieces of yoga. And remember, when we talk about yoga, this idea of yoga is to liberate ourselves from the mind chatter. It's to bring our, it's yoga literally means to yoke or to unite, to bring, our mind and actions in alignment, to bring our breath to movement together, to just really unite and to allow ourselves to be free and liberated from the mind stuff. And we have eight limbs, or eight tools, say for example, that can support us in accomplishing that, right? So if you didn't listen to that podcast, you can go back. The yamas and the niyamas are the first two of the eight limbs. And the yamas and the niyamas are basically codes of conduct. They're ethical ways of being in the world. There's five of each. And the yamas are defined as our code of conduct and how we are in relationship to others, how we relate and integrate ourselves into the world outside of ourselves. And it's literally, yamas are literally defined as abstinence. So what not to do in the world. Okay. If that makes sense. That was always a weird one for me to grasp, but that's another story. And then the niyamas are codes of conduct or ways of how we view and observe ourselves. So how we see ourselves, how we take care of our heart, how we take care of our space, how we connect spiritually along this path. And so there's five of each. So we have the yamas and the niyamas. Combined, I love teaching this in teacher training because I always take the, I like to take the, the written word from ancient texts about what this means and then try to bring it into modern day, like what does that look like? And having the privilege of being able to share yoga teacher trainings all these years, that has just been such an evolution. It's just so beautiful. So with this podcast, I just want to go through one by one. So first, yama is ahimsa. And ahimsa is defined as nonviolence. And this is compassion for all living things. It goes beyond physically hurting someone or something, or even I know people in class used to talk a lot about like bugs, like not killing bugs, right? But it's also cultivating an attitude of having an awareness of your I am statements. What do you, how do you, what words do you put after the words I am what? And so many times I listen to people talk a lot and even myself sometimes, and I find that we are our own worst critics. And so, cultivating an attitude and mode of behavior, of, non-harming, non-violence, it doesn't mean that we don't feel these other feelings like anger or jealousy or rage, right? We just learn to see these things through the eyes of compassion, right? We learn to not react. We learn to get close enough to our own violent or destructive tendencies so that we can see what is the root cause of them and then look at ourselves and our inner demons with compassion, right? And this is a big deal because I think ahimsa is underlying, it underlies everything. And even though the yamas are, we talk about how we relate to others, if we can just remember that everything is a reflection of our own thoughts, our own life, what tends to happen when we practice ahimsa is that we tend to start to notice our reflection in others, and that that idea of compassion is born and cultivated and integrated. So that's the first one. And then the second one is satya. So it's commitment to truth. Satya is commitment to truth. And this is really about honest communication and telling the truth and allowing ourselves to not gossip, allowing ourselves to live in our most authentic nature. You know, commitment to the truth isn't always easy, but it's a lot less complicated. You ever like tell a lie and then you have to backpedal forever? Like, wait, what did I say? What did I say? I'm the worst liar in the world because I have the worst poker face. I can't lie because I can't remember what I've said. So I think it's just easy to remember, you know, telling the truth, having a commitment to truth. And I always like to go back to practicing, you know, these yamas with self first. So practicing honesty with yourself, you know, having a sense of honest reflection, honest judgment, you know, not pointing the finger out all the time and pointing the finger in, and really having that sense of commitment to truth. And sometimes the truth isn't always convenient. I think that's a big deal. And I think making those choices to live in our truth, sometimes it means that people will fall from our lives, or jobs will go away, or, you know, people won't like us. I think sometimes we want to tell some sort of story, basically because we want to be liked. But in the end, telling the truth is really the best mode of transportation in this world. And I also, you know, if you kind of commingle this one with compassion, if you can speak your truth with a little sprinkle of compassion, everything seems a little bit easier. The third one is asteya, which is non-stealing. Remember, these are all abstinence, right? So we don't want to steal. And when we think of stealing right away, what do? We think of like, oh, well, of course I don't steal. I'm not gonna steal somebody something that belongs to someone else, right? But I beg to just give you one example that I see all the time. Okay. Let's say, you know, you call someone, and when they pick up the phone, before you even say, "Hey, is it a good time to talk?" you just start spewing what's going on with you. Now, I have done this before. We have all done this before. So if you have never done this before, good for you. But I would assume that all of us have done this before at some point. That's stealing someone else's time. You know, so we want to be able to remember that non-stealing isn't just stealing someone else's tangible items. This is about, you know, not taking anything that hasn't been freely given to us, right? Reserving our questions for another time. You know, I just had something happen the other day where I really, and I think sometimes this gets challenging with texting, right? We just like text when we're thinking of something, and we don't know what that person's got going on, and we might be like, why aren't they responding? Or even when we say things in our text, like, you don't need to respond to this right now, right? We're still putting it out there and taking other people's time. So part of that idea of stealing time is to, or asteya, is just to do our very best to make sure that we aren't taking anything that has not freely been given to us. And then the next one is Brahmacharya, or it's this is a really misunderstood yama. So this is abstinence, right? So this is abstinence as sometimes interpreted as celibacy, right? So when we talk about that energy of Brahmacharya or Brahmacharya, however you want to pronounce it, it's abstaining or holding in or restraining is a better word, our sexual energy. This is the one of the definitions, to regenerate our connection to our spiritual self, right? It also means that we don't use this sexual energy to harm another, right? And oh my gosh, I could do a whole podcast on this, right? Just advertising in the world. And so I like to think of this, I like to think of this yama in a even a broader perspective. It's definitely maintaining that sense of abstinence and celibacy so that we can have that deeper connection to God. But it's also saying to ourselves, you know, I am reserving this very sacred connection for myself with spirit, with source, with God, and for that individual that I feel, you know, closely enmeshed with intimately. I wrote this in my manual. It's a omnidimensional celebration of love and desire in all of its form. Right. So omnidimensional celebration of love in all of its forms. So, you know, there's two sides to the coin. We don't want to suppress this energy so much that it backfires and expresses itself in negative ways, right? But we want it's not so much whether we or not we use that sexual energy, it's how we use it, right? And so is that energy moving you closer or further away from your divine nature? That's really the bigger question, in my humble opinion. And then the last yama is aparigraha, which is non-grasping. So this is a big one. Aparigraha is not holding on to things. It's letting go. It's not manipulating others to get what you want. You know, this is at the crux of all Buddhist teachings, right? So Buddhist teachings tells us that the root cause of suffering is because we're grasping and we're holding on to something, right? And that's a true statement. And it's not just things. We all know that when we pass into the next life, we're not going to be able to take all these things with us, right? Like, I'm going to take this and this and this, like none of it. The bigger picture is the resistance that is created when we grasp onto other things, like, you know, the way things are, or the way things used to be, or even, you know, looking at people in our lives and grasping on to the way that they used to be. You know, well, you used to be this way, and how come you're not this way anymore? Well, of course, that person isn't that way anymore because we all grow and change, right? So I think this whole idea of grasping, aparigraha, goes so much deeper than just grasping onto our material items. It's grasping onto an identity that we might have for ourselves that keeps us stuck and stagnant. It's grasping onto our spouses, our partners, our jobs, our way of life, of the way the day is supposed to go. It's our expectations. It's grasping onto our children. It's saying like it should be this way, right? But when we open our hands instead and let go, we allow this beautiful divine energy to come in and show us the way that it is. And this isn't to be confused with like, oh, well, this is just the way it is, right? A parigraha is this allowing, it's non-grasping. It's just, I have no control. I have no say this is just, I'm open. That's the difference. So I really like a parigraha. Okay, let's go to the niyamas, which is the ways that we look at ourselves. How do we look at ourselves, right? Like, how do we function and integrate life into living soulfully? So the first one is saucha, which is purity. And I like thinking about, purity is pretty simple, right? Like saucha, you think about cleaning up your space, making your space neat and tidy so there isn't, stuff everywhere. And even as I'm doing this, I'm looking at my desk going, oh, I have some things here that I could go through, but I pretty much know what everything is. And, but there's a sense of clarity that comes with cleanliness, right? Now, there's also this idea of purity of body, mind, and soul and energy, I should say, as well, right? And the reason why we want this is because it creates time and space for a higher vibration, right? And so if we're consistently, where are my keys? Where are my keys? Where are my keys? I don't know where I put my keys. But if you had a key holder, you'd hang it up, right? You'd know where they are. Now, all of a sudden, that space that you've spent, that time that you've spent, where are my keys? Where are my keys? Where are my keys? Is connecting you further and further away from spirit, from source, from God. Also reading, clarity of what you scroll through on your phone, what you read, what you watch. There are certain programs that I absolutely love watching that are like suspenseful and it's like a murder mystery, but I can't watch them at night because it infiltrates my subconscious and I tend to feel it in my body. The more you practice this practice of yoga, and I'm not talking about just the asana, I'm talking about all of the limbs, right? When you start really putting these things into practice, you will choose saucha. You will choose friendships that are pure. You will choose organic food. You will choose to clear your space because you'll get to love that feeling of truth, of connecting to source and being like, oh yeah, I feel everything now, right? And so there's this drive to want purity, what you eat. Think about all the ways that you consume, what you eat, what you drink, what you watch, what you read, your friends, your environment, all of it. Think of all the ways you consume and then apply saucha to that. Okay, number two is santosha, which is contentment. And contentment, it's funny because when I love talking about this as I'm reading these to you, I'm just kind of looking at my manual because I love what I wrote. I don't change my manual from years ago because I find that it still all means the same thing. It's all still relevant. Contentment is not confused with happiness. Contentment is also not confused to be confused with like stagnant. Right. So you can be unhappy or you can be in a sticky situation, right? You can be experiencing something in your life that is hard and challenging, but you can still be content. That sense of contentment is being satisfied with what is and understanding that everything that is happening right now in this moment in time is exactly the way it's supposed to be. And so there's a sense of peace with contentment, right? There's a sense of like, I'm not super happy right now. I don't have everything I thought I was going to have at this point in my life, say for example, but I have hope and I love where I'm at and I have my health. It's not spiritual bypassing either. It's not, well, I'm not where I quote unquote wanted to be. I talk to a lot of people that say this. That's why I'm using this as an example. I didn't think I would be here at this point in my life. And then glossing over with some random gratitude and then saying things like, well, it's all good. When people say to me, it's all good, it's a huge red flag for me. when I hear that, I think, that's not contentment. That's accepting, sure, but what's underneath that? Because sometimes things aren't all good. They're not. I remember going to a class and hearing Rusty Wells say that. And he's like, sometimes they're just not good. And in those moments in time, it's okay if we can remember that this is a perfectly divine situation. And I am content with what is in this moment in time. And I surrender to it. Okay, tapas. Okay, so there's so many ways to talk about tapas. I like to think of, like, you know, literally translated as fire or heat, or our third chakra, the solar plexus, where we discipline the use of our energy. It's that discipline. It's generating the momentum to push us forward. It's, allowing ourselves to push ourselves through some sort of transformational portal in our life. And, sometimes we have that sense of discipline. We're like, oh my gosh, yes, I can just see it. I'm just going to push through. This is the hard bit, but I can totally make it happen. And then sometimes it's really challenging, right? And I think when we align ourselves with our soul's calling, whatever it is, or when we really love what we do or contribute to the world, whether it be parenting or being a student or, whatever we choose as our job or our career, if we have that sense of connection to it, we can discipline our energy to move forward. This idea of a burning fire, right? I like to talk about this when I lead a class in the solar plexus and really taking this energy, this burning passion in our tapas. You know, sometimes in our life, that fire in our belly goes out. Whether it's in a relationship or a job that we don't like or just in life. I think a lot of people experienced this during 2020, where it was just like, oh, okay, I give up. This is ridiculous, right? That's that feeling of like defeat. And then there's other times where that fire is burning so strong that you, like, your adrenals get fatigued. You're like, push, 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 push. But what we want is we want that slow burn, right? Now, there's going to be times when we need to push and turn up the volume, turn up the heat. And then there's going to be times when we don't need it so much. But we want to keep the inner house of ourselves warm. We want to keep those embers going, right? So, tapas are one of those things that are temperature controlled, if you will. You can't be on either side of the pendulum for too long. We should try to be in that middle space. Okay, the next one is swadhyaya. I love that. Swadhyaya, swadhyaya, self-study. So this is defined as any activity that cultivates self-reflective consciousness and can be considered swadhyaya. This is the soul being drawn to learning. I remember there was a year or two, maybe in my 40s, when all I wanted to do was learn. I was just like, oh my God, I can't stop reading. I think I read, like, I don't know how many weeks are there in a year. I think I read like 30 books in 1 year, because I was just like this sponge. I wanted to learn, and I didn't want to just read. I wanted to integrate what I was learning. That's self-study. It's turning, looking at what you're learning outside of yourself and turning it in and saying, how does this relate to me? How can I use these tools in my life? Why am I doing the things that I am doing? Where did that thought come from? Why am I acting like this? This doesn't even feel right for me. I want to shift the way that I function. I don't want to act that way anymore. I don't want to feel that way anymore. That relationship is no longer nourishing where I'm going. Self-study allows us to evolve. Self-study allows us to look at ourselves with deep compassion and know that we're on the perfect path for our soul's journey. And all we need to do is just know when it's time to shift. It's a beautiful, I love this one. I love self-study. It's being able to look at certain forks in the road in our life and say, what did I learn in that moment in time? What if I would have went this way? What if I would have went this way? I love this quote. I'm going to share this quote with you from Donna Farhi, an amazing teacher of the yamas and the niyamas. Love, 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 love her. In fact, a lot of my training in this part was really from her teaching. She said, and I quote, "Keep in mind, the degree to which we can tolerate ourselves is the degree to which we will be tolerant of others' weaknesses and flaws." Let me say that again. Keep in mind, the degree to which we can tolerate ourselves is the degree to which we will be tolerant of others' weaknesses and flaws. And that was Donna Farhi. Self-study can become challenging when we confuse our new self, quote unquote, with our old self, or we are challenged to truly notice our destructive tendencies, right? So when we're in self-study, it's really helpful to like journal or have somebody supporting you that's willing to put a mirror up for you or to hold space for you when you're like, holy shit, I don't like that side of me. That's weird. I don't want to do that anymore. And that person that's going to hold that space for you needs to be somebody that you really love and trust so that you can start to work through some of those tendencies. Okay, and then the last one, I love this word. I always have a challenge with it, so give me a little bit of compassion here, a little bit of ahimsa. Ishvara Pranidhana. Ishvara Pranidhana. Celebration of the spiritual. So this is connecting with God, connecting with spirit, connecting with source, giving up your mundane, minuscule little pea brain of a mind and saying like, I am part of something so much bigger in this life. And it can be done in so many ways. It can be church, it can be synagogue, it can be communing with your garden, it can be hiking, it can be surfing, it can be anything that reminds you that you are a part of something so much bigger, right? Relinquishing control to spirit, just saying, like, spirit, I do not know. Spirit, I do not know where I'm going. I have no idea what I'm doing. I really need your guidance and protection because I have no idea what's happening right now. Right? I can think of two times in my life where I literally said those words. No idea what I'm doing, spirit. I just know that where I'm at right now is not okay. I don't know how to handle it. I need your support. And when you really, really surrender to that, whatever that looks like for you, when you just give it up and give it to God or goddess, spirit, whatever you want to call it, you just give it up. You open those hands, life unfolds. And spirit will always come through. Sometimes I think part of our problem is that we forget that. We forget that there's something bigger than all of us. And we think that we know it all. We're like, and then I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do this. And then my kids are going to do this. And then my mother and my father are going to do this. And then my job is going to be like this. It's like, oh my gosh, you can say that. Yay, you. But when we wake up in the morning, right? This is how I try to do it. First of all, I wake up in the morning and I give thanks. 10 things. What am I grateful for? Why am I grateful for them? Right? And then I say, Spirit, please point me in the direction of what is most helpful for the elevation of my soul. Where can I be of most service today? And then I don't worry about how the day goes. I'm not like, oh, damn, I was supposed to do this and I was supposed to do that. I was supposed to do this, right? I have my little plan. This is what I need to do. And then if something comes up, I know that it was divinely orchestrated. And so I just let it go most of the time. And Anyway, so I hope that was helpful for you. I want to say thank you so much for inquiring and asking me to create podcasts that support you in your learning. This is so fun for me to bring some of these teachings from the yoga teacher training onto this podcast. And hopefully, if you haven't already taken your training, you'll think twice about it now. There's so much more, right? So much more. Thank you so much for listening. I'm extremely grateful. Have a beautiful day. Namaste.